Hello, hello, and welcome to Art House Garage, the snob-free film podcast where we make art house, indie, classic, and foreign cinema accessible to the masses. I'm your host, Andrew Sweatman, and today we've got a bonus episode to review a movie that's not so art house, but is, shall we say, culturally significant. Basically, whenever I want to talk about a movie that doesn't fit the art house vibe of the rest of this podcast, I just call it a bonus episode. If you've never listened to this podcast before, typically we talk about movies that are a little smaller, a bit more maybe artistically challenging, but we're no snobs. It's called the Snob-Free Film Podcast because we want to make challenging films more accessible. So, for instance, if you're someone who has always wanted to get more into classic cinema, we did a classic film starter pack last year. We also have an art house starter pack. Right now we're doing a Technicolor marathon. Or for something more modern, we recently did a series on the best films of 2020. So check out the podcast feed and see if there's something that might interest you. Today we're talking about the new Fast and Furious movie, F9, the ninth film in the Furious saga, which started way back in 2001. It's wild to think about how far this franchise has come and just how big the fan base has become. These movies really have a wide following, even amongst people like me who aren't necessarily that into action movies. We talk about why that might be in today's discussion. My guest today is a film critic named Ben Pearson. I've followed his work on slashfilm.com and on the Slash Film Daily podcast for a while now, so I'm absolutely thrilled to have him on the show. He's a huge fan of the Fast and Furious movies, so he's the perfect guest to break this movie down. If you don't know about Slash Film, they put out tons of news coverage at slashfilm.com, and they have a couple of podcasts. One is a weekly movie review show called The Slash Film Cast, and the other is a daily podcast about movie news and all sorts of other movie stuff, and it's called Slash Film Daily. I've been listening to it almost every day for a few years now. I feel like, why read the news when you could listen to smart people talk about it? And Ben is one of those smart people. We do keep this discussion spoiler-free, so it's safe to tune in even if you haven't watched the movie, and if you're on the fence about whether to go see this one, this discussion might help you decide. And here is my discussion with Ben Pearson about F9.
I used to live my life a quarter mile at a time. But things changed. My father now. I will always be in your heart.
Little Brian, I have a gift for you.
Your daddy gave me this. Now I'm gonna give it to you.
It's very special. It's for protection from what's coming.
All right, Dom, what's next?
No matter how fast you are.
I am not too big compared to you.
No one outruns their past.
I am more easy, you trying your best to become me.
And mine. Just caught up to me.
Been a long time, Dom.
So we're up against a master thief. Assassin. High performance driver. Who is he?
Jacob is Dom's brother.
Your whole life, you pushed yourself to be faster than Dom. Smarter than Dom. Stronger than Dom.
But could you kill him? Because I'm ready if you are.
I'm here with Ben Pearson, film critic and senior writer at slashfilm.com and podcaster on Slash Film Daily. Ben, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Absolutely, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
I am so excited to have you. And I, as I was like thinking, oh, I would like to do a Fast 9 episode, who in like the sphere of critics that I listen to regularly really likes these movies? And like, oh, it's got to be Ben Pearson. So I reached out and I'm so glad you came on. But so I wanted you on because you're such a big fan of these movies, but also because you have a pretty diverse taste in movies otherwise. Like I actually didn't watch any of the Fast and Furious movies until maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I had like kind of written them off as, oh, they're just, you know, silly blockbusters. But then I gradually kept hearing about quote unquote serious film people who really like them, whatever that means. So I was like, I should check these out. And I do think they're really good. And so I wanted to ask you, as someone who, is a big fan of the Fast and Furious movies, what do you think that it is that sets them apart as blockbuster action movies and kind of gives them such a wide appeal?
I kind of think this is a two-part answer, really. I think the first part is that even though this franchise has become, you know, this massive box office juggernaut that on the surface some people might compare it to other big franchises, there's really no other movie franchise, blockbuster American franchise anyway, that feels quite like this one. And I think these movies have this really unique mixture of completely ridiculous soap opera drama where, you know, people die and come back and you know, all of the ludicrous like ins and outs of the plotting of these films. And then you have obviously these gigantic over the top stunts. And then there's also like genuine heart to these movies, several of them anyway. Mm-hmm. So that's one part of it. And I think the second part is like, as somebody who spends a ton of time immersed in movies, I see a lot of the same types of stories and things over and over again. And personally, that means that I'm drawn to stuff that feels unconventional and sort of outside of the box and like takes big swings in its storytelling. And this franchise absolutely does that. And sort of like from a business perspective, this franchise is noteworthy because no other big, you know, series of films has organically evolved quite the same way that this one has, coming from, you know, what was essentially like a slick little B movie. And then just slowly over many, many years, we're in the 20th anniversary now, building out this diverse ensemble cast and changing genres and eventually growing into, you know, what it's become now. So I think it's sort of a combination of all those things.
I think that's all sounds exactly right. And it's so interesting because it's not exactly the way the MCU is set up or like Star Wars or something where, it started with a plan to be a big thing. You know, I think that's a really good point. For me, I think it's like, I don't watch a ton of big blockbuster action movies. And so I know this is not completely unique, but how kind of self-aware they are. And I mean, that's a big part of this ninth one as well. Mm-hmm. And kind of like the tone, it strikes a right balance, I think, between having that heart that you're talking about and also like knowing that this is silly. And it kind of started maybe with the fourth or fifth one, where it really kind of started going bigger and sillier. And to kind of compare it to something else, I think like the only kind of thing I was thinking with, it's not unlike like Aquaman, the way that one kind of knows that it's being hammy and silly. And I think I really like that about it, that it kind of, you know, it's going to stay in its lane and then just pile on as much craziness as possible in that kind of genre. And I think that just works really well. So I've become
I think I heard somebody else say that that another reason these movies do really well or sort of can exist really well in the lane that they've chosen is that like there are different ways that you can engage with this. If you want to be, you know, an insane psychopath like me, you can get like fully into it and like really care a lot about the convoluted timeline, for example, and like how, you know, track all of these ins and outs of these various characters and stuff. Or if you want to just sit back and say, hey, I just want to see, you know, a big action movie in a theater once every few years, you know, in the middle of the summer or something where I know there's going to be a lot of practical effects involved. Mm-hmm. It sort of satisfies that craving as well. So there's like different levels that you can engage with this stuff. And I think that feels slightly different than, you know, some of the other big movies that sort of require more of a narrative buy-in for you to even like baseline understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm. I think that's exactly right. That strikes me too, that you can take these really serious, kind of like what you're saying, but you can also just like go in and like probably be a really serious fan of like, I don't know, taking it really seriously, or you can kind of laugh at it and enjoy it on that level too. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's a mixture of both. And it's like a weird that all works, but it really does. Like in this movie, there was moments when I was laughing and other people in the theater weren't. And I was like, maybe this is just like another way to enjoy it. But yeah. So let's talk about this one in particular. I have intentionally not read any of your thoughts on this or listened to you talk about it yet, because I wanted to, you know, be fresh on the podcast. You even did a ranking I saw that was published. So how does F9 stack up for you compared to the other movies?
Yeah, this when I did that big ranking for Slash Film, F9 came in at number 4 out of 10 overall. I don't want to like go through the entire list or anything, but I think Fast Five is still my sort of platonic ideal for what these movies are. I feel like that's the film where it really like settled into its groove. It sort of embraced the narrative conventions of the heist genre in a way that it hadn't before. And introducing The Rock into the franchise really changed the group dynamic in a really exciting way. And the stunts also like really just launched to an entirely different level of ridiculousness in that movie. And I feel like the franchise has sort of been chasing that high ever since, and it's come close to capturing it, but it hasn't quite reached it yet in my estimation anyway. Okay. But yeah, I feel like this is, you know, 4 out of 10 makes it sound like it's right near the middle. And I guess technically it is, but that kind of belies the amount that I actually enjoyed this movie, if that makes any sense. I actually just really love Fast Five and the ones that are ranked above this. So it doesn't necessarily speak poorly of F9 that it comes in right around the middle.
Yeah, and so I haven't done a particular ranking, but I would have this definitely in the top tier. I've only watched them through once, so I should probably, if I really wanted to like dig in and kind of figure that out. But I really like this one. It was going to be very much close to the top for me. And I really like the fifth and the sixth ones. And I like The Rock fine, but, and this may sound like a travesty, but I kind of like that he's not in this one. I think that makes me like it a little more. But I think this one, yeah, it's kind of firing on all cylinders in a way that it's got all the action. It's got all like the, you know, family stuff to it. Mm-hmm. And it's just really creative. And I just think it's really nice to have Justin Lin back as a director.
Oh,
because
yeah.
I think the eighth one may be my least favorite of all of them. I really didn't think it was that great. But he just really seems to understand kind of what works here and gives us a lot of it in this. There's like a lot of creativity in the way the action's working. There's that self-awareness that I talked about that is really strong in this one. And then there's a lot of surprises too, and kind of, you know, characters returning, and we won't spoil all of that stuff, but I think it just gave me a lot of good stuff there. And I think he's also good to kind of pause and give us those human moments. It seems like in his entries is where we have the most of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then also the use of music. And sometimes that all kind of comes together. And there's a moment in particular in this one where I think there's only one, like, you know, strictly drag race in the movie, and it's with young Dom and young Jacob. Mm-hmm. And there's a slow motion moment, not during the race, but actually before it starts. They're like sitting right before they get going, and it really slows down and the music gets loud, and it kind of gives us a minute to focus on kind of what they're feeling leading up to this race. And I think that makes the emotional stakes of the actual race that much stronger. So I thought that was a really nice touch. That kind of gets to the point of the flashback. So that, I think that is kind of unique to this one. There's a lot of flashbacks and kind of extended backstory sequences. What did you think about those?
I loved it. I Vinny Bennett, this actor, plays young Dom, and I thought he did a great job capturing the essence of a young Vin Diesel. I was not really familiar with his work before I checked his IMDb, and I don't think I've seen anything else that he's been in. But I'm frankly surprised that Vin Diesel, let's just say he has quite the ego. I'm frankly surprised that he allowed anybody else to play this character, because it is such a defining role for him. And I'm surprised that he didn't try to convince Justin Lin or Universal to do like a digital de-aging thing. Uh-huh. But I'm glad that he made that call, because I think it makes those parts of the movie, the flashback parts, play that much stronger. And Vinny Bennett, I think, did a really, really excellent job. The Jacob backstory, I think, is a little bit less successful for reasons that I can't really get into without spoiling things too much. But generally, I enjoyed going back in time and seeing some of those moments that Dom talked about in previous movies. I mean, he gives this big monologue in the first film about, you know, what happened when his father died, and how he ended up spending time in prison for beating this guy, you know, half to death. And you get to see those events play out. And you know, normally like the whole prequel thing and like seeing stuff that is referred to like, okay, so that would have been fine if we never saw this. You know, I'm not the type of person that like needs every single narrative thing like closed off and or explored, you know, further down the line. Some things can just work as organic character backstory, and it's totally fine. But the idea that we see this familiar story through the new prism of adding a new character into the mix, and with Jacob, is something that is like thematically interesting, even if I don't think it necessarily comes together all the way because of the stuff that happens with the Jacob character later on.
No, I think I agree with you on that. Although I do think Finn Cole gives a really good performance as young Jacob too. Like, and I've seen him in some other things, but I would never peg him for young John Cena. But I think it actually really works. I don't know. I almost wonder if they like did something with makeup to make his jawline look more John Cena-esque or something. But like, I think he's good. And in actually the moment at the end of that same drag race is I think a good moment on his part too, as far as performance goes.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed that aspect of it. So there's basically like three big main action set pieces in this. Of course, there's like other action things happening all over the place, but did you have a favorite action scene or moment in this movie?
I think my favorite big action scene was the chase through, I think it was Edinburgh, where Jacob is on this zip line that seems to be, you know, like 3 miles long or something. And then he lands on a roof and shoots another one and just seems to be traversing the entire city through zip lines, which makes me question the height difference of all these buildings and everything, which is just like
Spider-Man basically just swinging around.
And Dom is chasing him and they get in this fight where like, Dom's head gets like shoved back through a door frame and like he just does not seem to react to that at all. So those are the kind of sort of crazy over the top action beats that I really love. So that would probably be my favorite big action scene. I do have a favorite smaller action scene though, which was when Letty, Mia, and this new character named Elle were just wrecking dudes in this Tokyo apartment. And I liked it because it's the first time that you really get to see Mia, the Jordana Brewster character who's been with this franchise since the very beginning, actually get to like throw a punch and get some hits in herself. You know, she's been largely sidelined in these movies as just the love interest and or the mother, you know, later on. And I liked how she was incorporated in this movie. And I liked the introduction of this new Elle character, which I feel like we didn't really get to know too much about her in this movie. I feel like this is one of those instances where like they're introducing the character, they're gonna flesh her out later on. But I'm looking forward to learning more about her because I like the dynamic between her and a different character that she's sort of introduced alongside in this film. And then it's always great to see Michelle Rodriguez just like, you know, let loose there's this one moment where she like gets a running start and knees this guy in the chest and they both go flying out a window
and I think we can talk about the fact that Han is in this movie because that's in all the trailers and everything. So that's kind of shortly after that is when he returns, and I think even though I knew that was coming, I think it was a really nice moment. The lighting is done really well and just kind of a cool little flashing light to like, who is that person, even though, you know, we all know, oh, it's Han. But it was a nice reveal. I really like that action scene as well. I think the same for me, that middle one that has the zip line and everything would probably be my favorite, because it has all the stuff you talked about, but it also, so in all these movies there's some sort of creative action thing they add in, whether it's, you know, they're dragging giant safes through the streets and smashing stuff, or they have there's somebody like a submarine they're fighting in one of all these different things, or the airplane on the runway. And this one, the big kind of thing they come back to again and again is that these electromagnets that they can like switch on and everything starts flying around.
They somehow have like perfect precision control over the magnet stuff.
Sometimes they can just pull like power lines down, or sometimes they can don't think too hard about the logic of it, but it's really fun. And that's where that kind of gets introduced. And it's a pretty cool scene. And then there's also a fun twist there. I won't spoil who this is, but there's a character that we find out doesn't know how to drive and they've never driven before. And they are suddenly behind the wheel in this really high pressure situation. I thought that was like a fun little touch as well.
Scene. Definitely.
Well, another thing that was revealed in interviews and stuff before this movie came out, so it's not really a spoiler, but if you don't want to know anything, maybe tune out, but this movie does involve characters going to outer space, which is another level. What did you think about the outer space moment?
So I know the space thing is probably going to be too much for some people, and I understand that, especially if you're not like as invested. I mean, I saw the first movie in theaters. I actually got a speeding ticket with a bunch of my friends in the car on the way to see the second one in theaters. So, I have like a little bit of a nostalgic attachment to this franchise, too. So I've been in this thing for 20 years. If if somebody just came to this franchise recently and is not completely down with like the, you know, how completely outrageous some of this stuff is, I can understand how the space thing would be where somebody could just pull the plug and say, you know what, I'm done with these. Like, that's totally fine.
Yeah.
But as somebody who is totally bought into this world, I actually thought it was pretty well done and relatively quote unquote plausible within the world of these right. movies. You know, I wish there could have been a little bit more action up there once the characters actually got in space. Yeah, but there's a moment where Tyrese's character Roman looks out the window and you see planet Earth reflected in the glass next to his face. And when you compare that image with how this franchise started and like the super low stakes of everything, just something about that journey makes me very, very happy. So I actually thought that the space stuff worked pretty well. I'm wondering, you know, part of me wonders if they just sort of eased into space in this movie because they're going to go back in future movies, because I'm really trying to rack my brain and come up with ways that they can top themselves in what is going to be the two-part 10th movie. And I am having trouble coming up with, you know, something that is more outrageous than going to space. So maybe this was just a, you know, a toe in the water, so to speak. And then we're going to get, you know, a full on diving board moment in the next movie or something.
That's very interesting. I've been thinking the same thing. Like, what is possibly going to be next? I had thought about doing more space stuff, but that totally makes sense. But yeah, it totally worked for me too. Like, I think that gets back to this tone of like, is this serious or is this funny? Like, maybe yes, it can be the answer to both of those things.
yeah, I think
but
so.
I think that moment probably pushes the funniness a little much, where like I was giddy, I was laughing so hard, but then I heard someone else in the theater like balking at how stupid it was, and I was like, okay, this is the most crowded theater I've been in, by the way, since being vaccinated, and it was a good one to have that, but it was also a little nerve-wracking. But anyway,
yeah, it was my first time back in theaters, so it was a big deal.
I really like the space stuff. It is so silly. It gave me one of my favorite lines probably of this whole series so far, before they go out, like they're about to launch, and Ludacris says, "As long as we obey the laws of physics, we'll be fine."
Yeah, so my dad saw the movie with me, and he was sort of like taken aback at that. He was like, "How dare you use that kind of language in the movies?" Where, and I'm like, "Dad, you know, it's like part of it, man. Come on."
And then to get kind of more of that self awareness early on, there's a scene where Roman barely survives something in the minefield, and Tej says like, "How in the hell are you still alive?" And then that kind of gets played up more and more and more. So anyway, I thought I'd ride along with that, and I think that was really funny.
Well, yeah, and there's a moment also where Roman is like, you know, you mentioned Han comes back, and like the audience's big question is like, how in the hell is Han back? Like, what is the calculus there? How did that work? And Roman sort of takes the perspective of the audience, where he's just like, okay, I want to try to push aside like all of this obfuscating that you guys are trying to do, and I want to cut to the core of this and like just directly ask the questions that the audience has here. So I think that self-awareness is definitely on full display in F9, maybe more so than it has been in any other movie in the franchise.
Yeah, for sure. And Roman and Tej have always been kind of the comic relief in a lot of ways, but they're kind of now the audience surrogate a little bit too, which I think is kind of a cool dynamic. Well, cool. Is there any other thoughts about F9 before we wrap up? Like, that's all the questions I had.
Well, you mentioned the magnet stuff, and I think that the magnet stuff that happens concurrently with the Edinburgh scene that we were talking about earlier with the zipline and everything, I think that is the best use of the magnet stuff, where you sort of first are introduced to that concept, and then it's used in this really big, you know, climactic action battle. And I kind of feel like it was I don't know, overused, or like it sort of lost a little bit of its luster near the end of the movie. You know, when there's only so many times you can see somebody like spin a wheel and then magnets go, you know, shoot somebody away from you or pull them in, or before it starts to feel a little samey. And and I felt like it sort of fell into that trap. I wish there was maybe one more other little creative twist that they were able to fit into this movie, because it's kind of a long movie. I want to say it's like 2.5 hours or something.
When I saw the runtime, I was like, oh my goodness.
But yeah, other than that, I think generally speaking, it's a pretty, like mid to upper tier fast movie. And I really liked Helen Mirren in it. She has like a really, really small role, but she actually gets to be behind the wheel this time instead of just appearing briefly like she did in The Fate of the Furious. So hopefully we'll see more of her moving forward. And I just love the team aspect of these movies. And and bring in Kurt Russell's character back in a little bit. And then there's some other characters that don't show up, and I was happy about that, like Scott Eastwood from The Fate of the Furious, who I thought was just a complete charisma suck on the franchise.
Done with him for
He's just like literally never mentioned in this movie, and I was like, that is exactly what that character deserves. So a really enjoyable time for me.
Yes, very much so for me too. Yeah, I love Helen Mirren in pretty much everything, and she's so great in this. And I've been seeing some rumblings on like the interview circuit they're doing about Michael Caine could come later. I think that would be a really cool thing. You know, it has, you know, history with Italian Job and everything, and car stuff. That could be a cool full circle thing for him to
100%.
Come into. So anyway, yes, I'm excited to see what happens with these last two movies that are coming. And I really enjoyed this one and recommend it for. Especially for fans of action movies, and if you're on the fence about, you know, is this one worth seeing, whether or not you're like really into Fast and Furious, I think this one would be definitely worth a watch. It's a good time at the big screen.
100%.
Well, thank you so much, Vin, for coming on the show today and breaking down this movie. I really, really appreciate it.
Absolutely, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'd love to have you back sometime. Huge thanks to Ben Pearson for being on the show. You can find his writing on slashfilm.com and hear him on the Slash Film Daily podcast. He's also on Twitter and Instagram as @BenPears. I'll link all of those things in the show notes. Coming up on the podcast, we've got a review of the wild new film Zola from A24, and we return to our Technicolor marathon with a discussion of the 1948 film The Red Shoes. Rance Collins is back to finish up that marathon with us. And that does it for this episode of Art House Garage. Thank you so much for listening. We've got a few years worth of episodes, and you can hear all of those in your podcast app of choice. Our theme music is by composer Paul Hunefeld. Learn more at appallingproductions.com. If you want to support Art House Garage, leave a rating or review in your podcast app, or you can buy an Art House Garage t-shirt at arthousegarage.com/shop. Stay in the loop about Art House Garage and the films we're covering by subscribing to our email newsletter by going to arthousegarage.com/subscribe, or you can email me directly, andrew@arthousegarage.com. And of course, follow on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. Just search @arthousegarage in all those places, or find links in the show notes. And that will do it for this episode. Thank you again so much for listening, and until next time, keep it snob free.